Welcome back to Deep Thoughts, ladies and gentlemen. It's somewhere in the 50s out here. Just stopped raining. It's raining for a couple days. All right. So, today I'm going to pierce a little deeper into the notion of multiple dimensions of existence. I almost want to call this like dimensions of reality. But I think some people are going to use the keyword interdimensional realities. So we'll see how we title this thing in the end. You guys already know. I don't even know. Let's look at that. You got more information than I do. So I did a whole episode on interdimensional beings. I've talked about loosely in one episode at least this notion that, and I've heard this now since I had the epiphany, I think it's almost like epiphanies are dropped on the world as a whole, and then we all have them, and we all go off and create our original comments using these epiphanies, and then we all find, oh my God, you had that idea too, and it was like, when did you have that? Well, that's around the same week I recorded this, you know, and so I do think that stuff's just dropped on you. But I am watching the show Fringe, like I keep telling you guys. I'm on season 2 now, or about to start it. And I will just say, without mentioning anything about Fringe, it's very inspiring in this subject matter. Because the writers are very, very informed about all things. Let me just tell you, it's a great show. Anybody that likes this show, Deep Thoughts Radio, you will love Fringe. Period. As I smoke this stick my buddy Dave gave me, the Patoro, so far so excellent. But I've been toying with this whole thing of, you know, when you get into conspiracies, which are conspiracy facts, you have the situation where there's this weird disconnect with humanity for the very first time in your life. You see things from a different perspective, and you can't find anyone else at times that believes anything that you're saying. It's a very strange experience. If you want to simulate this, go to SpaceX just before a launch, get the microphone where they're charging up all the actors to pretend like they give a shit about anything, and then start telling them how we didn't go to the moon. Everyone in the room will categorically reject anything you say, no matter if you've got video of the Capricorn set proving that this is fake. And that's a weird experience. Now, again, there's been a lot of work to create cognitive dissidence from foreign nations to the United States. They claim they succeeded in the 80s. I think they did. It just got worse. But I started to talk to enough intelligent people who don't do any research that I got this weird sort of little illusion that maybe there is like multiple dimensions of reality, but they all tend to talk to each other. And I used to have this joke that, you know, like a Robin Williams had multiple personalities, but the only difference is they were all exactly his age, exactly his gender, and they all went by the name Robin Williams. And so he was popping in and out of like different personalities, just like Sybil. But they all responded to, hey, Robin, hey, Mr. Williams. Oh, yeah, what? You know, it's like he did that. Obviously, he incubated all these characters. Jonathan Winters did it. Danny Kaye did it. Jim Carrey did it. Anyone who does impersonations has this talent. A writer does it without impersonating. You just create all these different characters, right? And you're very observant in reality. But the more that you dig down into the very fundamentals of mass energy, I think it's a little bit tougher with Newton. It's a little bit Newtonian physics. It's a little bit tougher with, I think, even perhaps quantum mechanics. Because quantum mechanics is trying to create, at least as it was initially taught to me in the 70s and the early 80s, it was initially taught to me that, you know, you have quantifiable packets of energy that they try to, you know, maintain order from. Now, they fully acknowledge the atom and the Heisenberg uncertainty principle and all these things, but it all comes down to, even in quantum physics, they believe that energy vibrates. Now, because they have created a very tangible model of mass energy, they acknowledge that, you know, energy is over here and mass is over here. Then through E equals MC squared, which is a bunch of, you know, logical thinking, was not invented by Einstein. The algorithm was finished the year before he was born and goes back all the way to Newton's time frame. When you burn a log, it didn't take a genius to go, man, that thing was solid, and now it turned into flames, and now it's smoke. And if we gather up all the smoke and all the ash, we do not have enough mass to make the log. So a bunch of it just changed into pure thermal energy, and it's now in the universe becoming something else, right? So again, that's how the theory came around. It wasn't Einstein at all, and that guy's a total fraud. Go see my final episode in season 4, which I guess is 400. And then we had the CERN Hadron Collider. And what was, there's a bunch of dark rumors about it, and they did satanic rituals and stuff in the basement, really not the Satan from the Christian Bible, but Shira, the god of destruction. You know, these kids, man, they're just fucked in the head. It's all I got to say. Let's go worship Cthulhu. I bet he's got a good stocking stuffer this year. Yeah, it's called You Don't Exist Anymore. Okay. Exceptionally low IQs have not read the story of Faust, you know, signing a deal with the devil and think you're going to get anything out of it. They haven't watched Ghostbusters 2, man. But once you free yourself up, and I'm not going to bore you guys with another, I'm going to say the word ether, and I'm going to go through a little bit of ether stuff with you, but don't worry, it's not going to become some massive etheral episode. But when you realize that all mass energy is made by one particle, and it doesn't have a charge, but the way it behaves is the way that we give it a charge. It spins one way, it's negative, spins another way, it's positive. But that every single thing that you think exists in the universe, a proton, a neutron, a quark, your dog, you are the collection of a bunch of, I don't want to say serendipitous, and I'm not talking about the intent of God over evolution or anything like that, but you're the current that is water. You know, I'm just going to put this analogy out there in case someone hasn't been to the channel before. If I took a sink of water and I pull the drain out and it starts doing a little tornado vortex, and I point at it and I go, what is that? And you go, oh, that's a little vortex or current or whatever you want to call it, tornado. And I can be a jerk and go, well, that's just water. Yeah, I know it's water, but it's doing something. What's a bubble? It's still water. It's just shaped like a sphere, right? With a little oxygen in the center. Now, if I could just say, look, you know that there's a force of direction going on that tornado. Now, I want you to erase the water in your mind, but keep the force model exactly where it was that created that funnel. That force model, which is turns into the Fibonacci pattern or the fractal, it's what you are. We're probably more a Mandelbrot set than anything. These infinitely complex fractals, but flowing through us in every direction that's out there is ether behaving like water. But because you don't see it, because it's moving 50 times the speed of light, and you don't have the capability of just stopping one little ethereal pixel in your hand, it is synthesizing you however 50 times the speed of light. You're being resynthesized constantly. It does have the ability to slow itself down, even though it's moving extremely quickly through your system. It doesn't turn into the chemistry effect of turning into flame. So you don't just spontaneously combust. But imagine if spontaneous combustion, which is obviously a rumor from the past, I called it the old-fashioned divorce settlement, was some anomaly in the Earth's behavior, some anomaly that happens in a room. You don't hear about it anymore, so, you know, it'd have to be in the era that this was being claimed, and the photographs of spontaneous combustion bodies, it's just really interesting. You know, like a whole guy's body's gone, but from his calves down to his shoes, he's perfectly fine. And only the skin at the top of, like, each leg is seared, but the rest of it's okay. I mean, the rest of it down below is okay, but the body's gone above. It's really weird. They used to say people fell asleep with, like, cigarettes in their hands, and that would burn them up. Come on. come on, these photographs, what would happen if you caught on fire? And aren't you made of mostly water? You might set your shirt on fire, but you're going to burn the place down if you're getting it so hot your body's just melting off the top of you, right? But now imagine that the current gets disturbed and it does unravel who you are. And there's a bit of thermal discharge at the fringes, which is the one I really remember is two legs and shoes in front of a chair. And then there was sort of a black imprint where the person was. But the cloth on the chair, although damaged, wasn't like, you know, it wasn't like a flamethrower that did it. It was like something happened so quickly that by the time the flame was there, it was gone, such that it really just singed the fabric and didn't completely burn the thing to the ground. So if you saw a chair, it's all burned out and there's the cloth is gone. You're looking at the wood framework and it's burned too, and you have two legs sitting there. Yeah, you could do the, I dropped my cigar, I was really tired. But interdimensional living or dimensional living, it's hard for us to grasp it on one level and then not so hard on another level. The hard one that's tough for us to grasp is that we don't have anything in another dimension. Okay, I'm going to get to paranormal in a second. But on a daily basis, if I went over and shook your hand, I'd touch your hand, we'd feel my hand, I'd feel your hand, and we'd do the greeting ritual. However, you can, right now I can move my hand through the cold 55 degree night, and I can feel a little resistance from the atmosphere. Can't see it, it's there. Now, some people in the paranormal world believe that they are seeing a ghostly dimension, right? They can feel cold and hot places in rooms. I don't know if anyone's ever tried to explain it, but I have this weird thing that happens. I think I may have mentioned it once before, but I will get my both my grandmothers. Let's try to think. One of my grandmothers, I don't think, wore any perfume. And one of my grandmothers did. And it's that grandma perfume. It's a scent that's more flowery. It's more old-fashioned. When perfumes started getting mass-produced in the 20th century, you know, my grandmother that wore it was born in 1912, so you could just dial yourself back to the scents that she became attracted to, and then she maintained that preference, even though she bought new scents in the future. It was a really old-fashioned smell. And it's not something that I ever run into anymore, because the old ladies of today are different. They have a different scent preference, right? So I'll be walking around my world, usually always in my home. That's the other weird thing. In fact, it is. Now I think about it, it's only ever been in my house. I will turn a corner, do something, and I get this absolute smell of my grandmother. And I guess it's sort of unfortunate. My other grandmother didn't wear perfume, so I don't know what she would do. Hover over my bed again, tell me she's on the other side. But so you get these little imprints, and you, like, I would sit there, like, I still do it. I mean, it's probably once a year I probably get this. And it's interesting, you know, and I believe in spirits. I do. So I kind of like, I pause for a second, you know, I'm like, hey, Grandma, what's up? You know, and how's life? You know, nothing ever happens beyond that point. But it's strange because the scent will last, I think, within reason, at least a minute, if not a little bit longer than a minute. And so then I usually nowhere near eating food. I'm nowhere near drinking anything. I'm not putting on freshly laundered clothing. I'm not exposing myself to any element that would be necessarily triggering randomness in my nose that then creates a what they call the flavor. Flavor is the combination of your tongue giving you taste and your nose giving you smell. Flavor is the two things in between. This is obviously more smell, right? So I think that there's dozens and dozens of things that we experience that we just blow past and Like when I did the bilingual aphasia episode, you know, I asked my buddies right after I did the episode, well, what do you think, man? What do you think about bilingual aphasia? Well, it's when you wake up and you can speak another language. You can't speak your language anymore, or you're speaking in a British accent for the rest of your life. And boy, do you get the Westworld host expression on their face when they're seeing something they're not supposed to see. You get an answer that is the equivalent of, I don't know, it doesn't look like anything. You know, when you're showing them a photograph of something, right? They're not supposed to see. It's almost like there's neural inhibitors in man without significant enlightenment, which is you learning about things and expanding your thinking, where you're just, they can't hear you. They can't see you. They can't process anything you're saying. Strange. But if we were to say the only thing that these currents we're talking about can bump into are other currents that are obviously at the vibrational frequency that we're at. And this is not a new idea. You've heard this 1,000 times in sci-fi movies and television shows. And then you're able to interact with it. There's plenty of shows and movies that have dealt with, you know, people resonating mass. The Philadelphia experiment, where they resonated a ship to be out of phase with this world, and then all the people fell inside the deck. And that's a really interesting thing, because we definitely had a lot of amazing sci-fi writers at the time. You have to know that. These people weren't stupid. War of the Worlds was written in 38, right? The amount of science fiction popping out of the world back in the day was really amazing. So someone being able to think that up is definitely a possibility. But the Philadelphia experiment really occurred, and I probably should do a whole episode on it, right? I was raised with the movie that was made in the 80s, and so for me it was almost, this did happen, and it was exactly like the movie. That's sort of what I felt like when I was a kid being raised with the film. But it was based on a Tesla theory, as I understand it. I'll go research and get all that good stuff for you. But it was resonating, the ship, at its own frequency, because the ship is connected with steel. Anyone on the deck with rubber shoes, right, is not going to inherit a solid transformation. They're not going to get the same vibration up their body, limbs, to go along with the ship at the same rate. So here goes the ship into another dimension, but the human beings on it are maybe changing, but they're not changing fast enough, so they start sinking into the ship. You know, and the whole thing was they did this, and, you know, part of it was the idea to transport the ship from point A to point B really fast, which I think is just, whoa, like a teleportation thing, right? I do believe that if we ever do come up with teleportation of any kind, it's going to be not us necessarily doing what happened in Tron, where you're taking apart every atom and then recreating it on the other side. Eventually, quantum computers will get us to that level, and we're sure going to find out if we have a soul. But I think teleportation is going to be based on folding space. And I know that sounds rather Dune or sci-fi, but I really think that that's what's going to take place. They're going to take space in its full integrity and then just warp your body to another location, or create this doorway, and you're going to walk in, you're going to pop out the other side. Now, whether or not you increase, you still are having to travel the distance, who knows, right? But they want to take a bubble around you and then just push the bubble with you standing in it to Mars or to the moon or across the country or whatever, right? But before you get to that, you have to ice down the theory of what the hell you're talking about. You have to understand mass and energy beautifully. Well, you know, I'm always complaining that ether was erased from the science books when dipshit Einstein came around, right? They just used him as a tool to erase what we learned from Tesla. But what was the damage of doing that? Most of us say, hey, man, we would have free energy right now if Tesla had his way. And you're right. But what other research? Now imagine this. We know from Faraday to Tesla that ether is the way the world works. Okay. They used it in all of their inventions. They used it in all of their science. These are, you know, Ohm, Volta, all these dudes. Okay. Now, they shut it off for us in the early 20th century. with some bogus experiments and just people didn't know. I mean, that stuff was so advanced for the average human being back then. The telegram was probably the average knowledge of a human being, and even that was a tiny reservoir of sentient beings that understood the technology that had to carry a message on a wire for hundreds and hundreds of miles. That was not easy. It's not just a matter of pumping energy in. So the military and other privately funded laboratories got to continue decade after decade after decade understanding ether, understanding how this place is really put together, at least a hell of a lot more than anyone who doesn't believe in it. They had tons of stuff that was in Tesla's office when he died at 85 years old. Donald Trump's uncle retrieved it all. Okay. What could you gain knowing something about how the universe works? And then when you build the world's largest machine, a 10 billion euro machine, which then inherited another $10 billion worth of repairs and upgrades. It's on the, Switzerland and France, something like that. To do what? To slam two protons together? Come on. I mean, yeah, you might have like a list of things that you want to find out about the universe, but 10 billion euro plus another, again, it's in several stages. They blew it up at first and they had to fix it and then they had to upgrade it. It's a money pit. Then they lied and said they found the Higgs boson God particle, which, boy, when you just go see my episode on CERN, you'll laugh your head off. I think it's in season one. It's been really well received, seriously. How would you conduct experiments to discover whether or not you're right or wrong about the fact that maybe we're in one infinitesimal slice of the frequency range, just like a radio? I mean, you know, it's not a big deal to dial down to the 88.5 and get the classical channel and go up to 106.7, get K-Rock in Los Angeles. And, you know, it's like you don't quite understand. It's still a black box, but still you can figure it out in your brain. Well, yeah, it's not frequencies and, you know, whatever. Okay. Well, it's right there in front of your face. A little bit of proof that you can have a whole reality. I mean, imagine this. Okay, we've got this big right-wing, left-wing hate pool going on, right? All right. So on one channel, it's a liberal channel espousing the divine intent of the Lord and Savior Hillary Clinton. And then you go over a few frequencies and you're living in red state Donald Trump world. Maybe another one over, you're libertarian. Now, you know, if you listen to just one of those channels, you don't go to the other ones because you don't like those people, you don't like the way they think, you're in a totally different dimension of reality. How your brain is being propagandized and synthesized is completely different. You're going to be a different person than the people that listen to those other channels. You're going to believe intimately, most likely, a bunch of stuff that's different from other people. Well, that's a way of measuring reality, and that's where we get these scientists that say, oh, there's more dimensions, right? They're looking at different metrics, more physical metrics, time metrics. And if you want another analogy to simplify that, short people have a different dimension of reality than tall people. Completely different. They see the world totally different than each other. Those of us who are more intellectual, we program, we sit in sound studios or whatever. We don't have the dimension of reality that an NFL football player has. And so they're being hit constantly by dozens and dozens of hundreds and hundreds of other players over the course of one season. And we're not used to being, in my world, I'm not used to being, hit by a linebacker or a tackle or something, right? But they are. So their perception of reality, their day-to-day churn is completely different. The way they see the world is different. You take a football player and put him in a bar and call him a name, that dude has been hit hundreds and hundreds, if not tens of thousands of times since high school up to their professional career, And you wonder why they can just snap the neck of their girlfriend and end up on TMZ and go to jail. Us nerds, you know, we're sitting there going, oh, honey, are you happy? You know, how dare you talk to me like that? So it's a different world. But what was really strange is I was showing one of my family members some conclusive proof about 9/11. The physics. I'm a physics major, right? I mean, it's been my whole life since I learned about the first thing at 9 years old. The person I'm talking to has never, ever expressed a single fact about physics her entire life. Ever, ever, ever. But when I showed her something that broke her Kubler-Ross effect, right, the denial came in, then the anger came in. It was actually denial first, then anger. And I was looking at her going, well, it's right in front of your face. I mean, this stuff doesn't happen. It's not possible to happen. Go buy a book somewhere and read it. Just look at that basic thing right there. And they couldn't really interact with my dimension of reality, is the way I saw it. And I was kind of going, and they believe everything that's official story, man. I mean, they're official story aficionado, right? Which means utterly indoctrinated. A friend of mine reminded me today that anger in general is a sign of a low IQ, which is why I'm always telling you that the Bible makes God look like a moron. God's getting angry all the time. Well, how do you get angry? First, you get surprised. And then you can't resolve it any other way. Now, we're all guilty of it. There's something that makes every single one of us angry. To the degree you're becoming more angry by little things constantly. Change your life, man. Because you need a life where you're happy, because that's where you boost your IQ and you boost your integration with the world. In most cases, you know, some crazy scientists or hermits here and there. But the more because there was a phase with this person in my family where I was like, all right, will you allow me to send you some more things? I won't send anything that hardcore. I'll send you some other things, fun things. Sure. I'd send them over. And later on, you know, we don't talk that much. So it was kind of like later I check in. Hey, you see that thing? I did. And, you know, I just, you know, well, you know what they say. And then here comes a bunch of official story stuff. As long as anyone wrote a debunk article on something, boy, that was the other way out of the game, right? And you start to realize, you know, it may just be simply the cowardice soul of this particular human being and the intellectual incapability to engage reality and, you know, figure out what's going on. All right. As long as they're blissfully happy, I guess that's cool. You know, I'm not looking for that person to help us in the truth battle for sure. But the interdimensional thing is interesting to think that we have, and I said this in my time episode back in season one. I think it's season one. I think I just called it time because I was into really cool short titles. But I think that I probably should have called it, you know, does time exist? And I don't know if that's what I called it. I can't remember. But the way I've described time and reality for 2.5 decades is that I see the universe as an infinitely dense Borg cube, or maybe sphere to be more default shape. And every possible variation of all possible reality, not impossible reality, so there's a bit of a distinction there, right? Like, I can't stand on this patio, no matter how big I make my thighs in any other reality, and just jump to the moon. That's never going to be possible, as far as I know. So that doesn't exist anywhere in the timeline. Me getting to the moon probably exists, whatever the fuck that thing is, but impossible things don't occur. So everything that's happening, this is part of my law of attraction episode way back in the day, was that I do believe that your frequency of preference and gullibility and I would say buy-in to reality, all of which we all have, okay, is that we are picking the next second of our reality. according to our vibrational frequency. So you have two metrics we're going to measure here. Your vibrational frequency has infinite futures and infinite pasts. Everything you could possibly do since the day you were conceived in your mother's womb, you have done. You just are only experiencing one linear path to the sort of illusion of time, right? As things change, there is sort of a ticker of, I started this episode, now I'm 34 minutes into the episode, regardless of where you see it. And so there's time passing, but it's in my head, but it's because I have memory. I know what I did before, therefore I can acknowledge memory. They prophesize and theorize that, not prophesize, but they theorize that, or postulate that man had a point in time where we didn't have the developed memory that we have now, which I think is kind of logical depending on how we were created. And so we were more iconic languages, the here and now. We had, you know, if yesterday was gone, we didn't remember it. And just think, you could fall in love every day with your wife or husband, right? That'd be cool. Eventually, you look at your dog and go, why do I have this old thing with me here? It looks like it's about to die. But now the second metric is, what frequency are you on? What are you vibrating at? All right, well, what's your current? So imagine, let's use electricity as a little bit of a methodology here, which kind of ties back to the radio analogy, because you have a certain wave of energy that the radio's picking up, and it's being modulated so you can hear sound. But you're vibrating at, say, 1 volt, or 1 amp, let's put it that way, so we have a flow. So it's 1 amp, and you deal with other 1 amp beings because that's the only thing that you can see with your eyeballs, and it's the only thing you can feel with your hands. Your planet, disc, whatever, your bedroom, this microphone is all 1 amp. This is all I can interact with. But because numbers are infinite, theoretically, 1.000001 amp, now maybe there's a ghost there because I can kind of see it, but I can't see it, can't touch it. Maybe there's a certain threshold of amperage. I mean, this is a bad analogy, but there's a certain threshold of frequency that you have to be a certain next notch over before you can see it. But it seems to me that whatever that, if this is true, okay, this may all be bullshit, but if this is true that there are multiple dimensions, that it seems as if they are almost efficiently, perfectly separated from each other. There was an episode of Star Trek, which was then lifted for Fringe, but it's the mechanism that, there was an episode where they visited this planet. This was a subplot, as a matter of fact, I believe. It's in Voyager. And there was a whole race, but it was definitely a person that if they got mad in a room, everyone else got mad in the room. If they were happy in the room, everyone got happy. But if there was an acute emotion like, you're taking that from me, don't take that from me, and everybody would like blow up on each other and get mad and punch each other out. Okay. So we talk about the black apple. I talk about the idea that when you have a black apple happen, and for those of you who haven't seen the episode called The Black Apple, it is about these external visions that you adopt as your own thoughts, but they're not your thoughts. It's kind of speculative future that usually goes negative. Now, if you speculate positive, it could be that they're in even proportions, but when you speculate positive, you've had a good day. You just feel good, right? And you assume everyone's having a good day, and then when you talk to someone, you assume them into a good condition, and you have a good conversation. Oh, man, I like hanging out with them. They're always making me feel better. Then you have your Debbie Downer that is always, wah, wah, you know, they're always drawing in the worst things, right? Which is why it's very important to me that you protect your children from negativity. In from you to your kid, from the world to your kid, and you're always asking your child, what do you want to be when you grow up? What do you like to do? You know, what should we do today? And you let the kid choose, because the kid is going to pick something cool. I know a lot of my friends, especially rocker buddies of mine that had kids later in life, and they always tell me the same thing. They're like, these kids made me younger. I was getting old, but then I took care of this little boy or this little girl, and we built Legos and played dolls and whatever. It's some big, tough rocker guy with tattoos all over him playing dolls, you know. And it just made him younger. Because the frequency off that kid is infecting them. and they look younger. They, you know, it's like crazy. You think you don't have any energy. Oh, man, I could never have a kid at my age. And then, boy, you have a kid, and you're like, man, it saved me. It put 20 years on my life, you know? So I started thinking about this more and more, especially due to Fringe. I don't want to ruin anything for you, but that's all I'll say. And it all started coming back to me, this idea that, like, man, are we all, you know, living in this multiple dimensional reality? And the Mandela effect, which, again, a lot of people just poo-poo the Mandela effect because they're scared of paranormal realities. They're scared of things unraveling and being different than what they thought it was going to be. And, you know, there's definitely fake Mandelas and Mandela effects that are just lapses in history because there's like two people who remember it the other way. And you're like, I don't know about that. Maybe it's true for them. Don't know. But there are millions and millions of people that agree one way, and probably hundreds of millions agree one way, and then another group of the same size goes the other way. When I really started to think through the Mandela effect because of the Eli Whitney situation, the guy that invented the cotton gin, and me being brought up my whole life that he was a black guy, and everyone I know thought he was a black guy, and then finding out later he's a white guy from Yale University, a little Skull and Bones activity, my mind was blown. I was like, oh my God, this is definitely a real situation. And again, the day I found that out, for those of you who didn't see the episode, I went to my business partner who was 71 at the time, and the other guy in the room was probably 57. We're in this beautiful laboratory with a bunch of LED screens. We're inventing this LED 3D theater, which you guys will eventually see in your lifetime. I mean, I can unequivocally tell you that my partner and I put that together. It's awesome. But I said, hey, guys, have you heard the Mandela effect? They go, no, what is it? And I said, well, let me just give you a little test here. And I go, okay. And I said, what do you remember about Eli Whitney, the guy that made the cotton gin? And they go, I'm looking at them across the room. I got my 71-year-old partner next to me, and I got the 57-year-old guy up at the command center dishing out the media. And they both said in unison, well, I don't remember much, but I know he was a black guy. I said, yeah, so do I. But guess what? He's a white guy from Yale. Three of us born at different times, different parts of the country. I mean, my buddy was raised in Hiroshima. Okay, he's a white guy. His father was a test pilot. The other dude, I don't even know where he's from. He's from the Midwest somewhere, bounced all over the world. The IQs in the room, you know, the three of us combined, it's really high. And we all have it wrong. My family, again, my great-great-grandfather made an invention based on the cotton gin, as I was told, and the irony was that the guy who picked cotton solved the problem because he watched his hands pulling cotton off of a branch and realized that he was taking another branch and he was winding up all the cotton on another branch and then pushing it into his bag, and that's the way they did it. And so they just made a machine that did it. All right. And there are other black inventors that people say, no, you know, you're thinking about that guy. Like that guy existed too, exactly the way I remember him. But this dude was black. All right. He's all over the web in Black History Months. Eli Whitney, guy who created the cotton gin. All right. And there's a ton more. So how does this happen? Well, I had this previous experience with my family member going, my God, do you live in another reality that you can't discern reality? It could be, or it could be just, again, cowardice. So who knows? Hard to tell. But I started thinking about the Mandela effect just being an organic thing. It ties into my other episode, Consensus Reality, which is we are all conceding that this is the reality that we're in. So that adds an interesting dimension of reality, which is like, if I can't touch another reality because it's on a different frequency, either above or below the frequency that I'm at, then how does this history seep into this reality? And I think consensus reality is really where Mandela effect is, if there's any organic nature to it, which is sort of a whole nother conversation of reality where it's not like we didn't exist in their dimension and all of a sudden we came into their dimension and said, by the way, we remember things differently. Like, well, yeah, you're not even from our dimension. Oh yeah, okay. Something organic spread across that situation if it is indeed real. But there's this conversation, which I made another episode about, which is the interdimensional alien theory. And SGT Report just did an episode where they were talking about the... I'm still watching the episode, but they talked about how aliens are not coming from outer space. They're coming from another dimension. All right, sounds good, sci-fi-ish. But there's supposedly some paperwork that documented this, that the governments of the world, through massive observation and putting a lot of money into it, and supposedly communicating with these individuals, that that's sort of the way that they were told that this sudden appearance of UFOs were happening and how they left. Now, they tend to fly up and away, right? So I think that's interesting. So, I mean, if you're a flat earther with a dome overhead or firmament water, what's that? What are UFOs that are going up into the air and disappearing? I don't know, right? Not getting any more flat earth stuff for a while. So I started thinking, if you wanted to build a machine that's going to check this out, and there's all kinds of movies where they create, you know, dimensional portals to go into another dimension. So it's like a wall that's open and you can go through it, right? Not a teleportation necessarily. It's just ripping a hole between two dimensions. There's been so many movies. One of the Doctor Who seasons with Matt Smith, I think, was entirely based on that idea with the rip in the wall. Season one, which is brilliant, by the way. But you would think that you would have to control a fairly large amount of energy, whether it's a big hole or a little hole. I don't think it really matters. But what were the big rumors about the CERN Hadron Collider? They're trying to rip a dimensional hole between an evil dimension and our world, so that the, you know, the god of darkness or whatever is going to come through, and then, you know, all these Faust idiots are going to get wiped out thinking they're getting some Oreo cookie and milk reward, right? So I started to parse this whole thing of, if you did accelerate protons of all things in some giant circle, faster and faster and faster and faster and faster, and then collide them together, does that really spell interdimensional door? I don't know that stopping it would be the way you would do it. Wouldn't you just keep it going like a Stargate? You just keep going and going and going and going, and then stuff starts popping through. The Hadron Collider's been going for, a decade and some change now. I don't know. I don't know if we have any more darkness that we've ever had in the past. I think we've had far more insane eras of mankind with, you know, massive crusade killings and other just bloodbaths way before any CERN Hadron Collider was built. So I'm not convinced anything's happening there. Makes really no logical sense to me at all. But where is the common denominator scientific experiment / maybe category of science where you hear about time travel, teleportation, and interdimensional science? It's usually all surrounding electromagnetism, electromagnetic waves, because that has to be, okay, the most unequivocal way to start disturbing all the ethereal winds that we are made out of. And, you know, it's sort of like that. I've been using this analogy a lot this season, but it works great, which is, you know, the bridge back in the 30s was hit by wind frequency and it flopped apart. The HARP antenna, of which was patented to create earthquakes, is based on the theory that you throb electricity at a plate in the ground, and it resonates with the plate until eventually the plate does what it would naturally do, which is pop. And when it pops, you get an earthquake. It's an amazing weapon because it's completely untraceable unless we start looking for discharges of HARP antennas, which they're built way up in Alaska, where you got to fly and land to get to them, right? So there's no way we can go, you know, binoculars and go, oh my God, they're doing it, they're doing it. Oh, it discharged. No, I'm watching it hit the ionosphere in a particular direction. It looks like it's going due south or 80 degrees or whatever. And then all of a sudden there's Fukushima. all of a sudden there's an earthquake in Indonesia. We don't know, because we can't track the from to, because they put it so far out in the middle of nowhere. And isn't that weird? Isn't that weird they would pick the most hostile, expensive location to build HAARP? Go to the California desert, man. It's huge. Go out to Kansas. Mow down some grass and some wheat fields and just pay the farmer for the lease on the land and build these antennas so we can all see what's going on. Oh, but it's a weapon. Tesla, when he was in his Colorado Springs experiment, which I mention often because I want you to remember, the Colorado Springs experiment proved there was a plasma core to Earth. And because there's a plasma core to Earth, we will have no problem eventually siphoning out of the bowels of the Earth infinite electricity. We don't need any power plants. We just need transmission wires. And if we resurrect the tower that Tesla was building, it'll be beamed into our homes. Totally non-lethal. My computer will just work right there without any plugs in it, you know, with any power supply in it, just like all Tesla's machines. Maybe not every single one he ever made, but the ones that Mark Twain kept saying, yeah, everything's on and there's no wires anywhere. But he said that when he did his experiment, he used two Tesla coils, one giant one and one small one. He put, I believe the experiment was half an amp into the ground, and he siphoned out infinite energy, had a standing lightning bolt for 60 seconds. I mean, let's all be quiet for 60 seconds and think about a deafening lightning bolt wrapping him in electricity. And so he's in there, it's going, they're both waiting for it to stop, but it's not stopping because it's infinite. So he had his assistant have to break the circuit to stop the siphon. But he said that when he was looking at his assistant, this is fairly well documented, he said his assistant looked like he was in a different time, meaning moving a hell of a lot slower than he was moving. And because he is so autistically amazing at seeing everything, I'm currently reading a book that he wrote in 1919. We will be doing a Tesla episode this season. He meticulously broke things down. And what's craziest is ADHD analysis of things. I'm listening to him talk about how he sees the world and how he parses everything. I'm sitting there going, this is the first dude who's ever talking like the way I think, you know? And I bet a lot of you do too. Totally recommend the book. If you don't want to read it, just get it on audio. What was going on in the room? Massive electromagnetism. And I mean massive amounts. So he immediately started working on that technology as sort of a side project. You know, maybe some interdimensional stuff. Right? Maybe he didn't know what to call it, you know. It's just that thing that happens. The anti-gravity engines that were theorized in the dozens by the mid-60s here in America and around the world were all based on electromagnetism controlling the ethereal winds around a ship to get it to move around. Bob Lazar, regardless if he believes in it, knows what he's talking about, the one thing he keeps describing is an ethereal wind propulsion system using antimatter engines. All right. So, what if the black apple thing is nothing more than leakage from realities that are right in front of us? And it's informing us backwards because we do, it's happening at a different time too. It's happening at the exact time we are now. But it's the worst possible choice that we could do with our life. And one of us is doing it. In fact, infinite amounts of us are doing everything horrible that could happen next. You're being suspicious, you're getting angry. And then what if you had PTSD stuck in you as well? A horrific event that you forgot, but you still have the trauma in your system. So now you're trying to pick the best second in front of you, but because you have a predisposition of an unsorted, unrecognized event in your history, your subconscious is tuned to the bad from time to time as you have swells of it come and go, right? Go see my episode on PTSD for help with that. But it really does start to explain some of the anomalies that we never talk about. Why is that person who's always chipper and always happy, always winning, constantly, never get sick, never gain a pound, always employed, best looking husband, best looking wife, best looking kids, smartest kids. Every opportunity falls in their lap. Maybe it's because they are just a tuning fork to that frequency. And as they pick the next second in this infinitely dense sphere of possibilities, that's the one they pick. So now think about this. And I've mentioned this in other episodes, but it's hard for me to talk about us tapping into another dimension where all of a sudden people start to show up in our world. That, you know, like someone else rented this house an infinite amount of times and I don't live here. And so maybe one dude who's like insomniac is sitting on this porch at a different time. And all of a sudden I see the guy and he looks over and sees me. Like, oh, and then we both fade away from each other's world because the vibrational anomaly of the universe, you know, resets itself or rebalances itself. But imagine we start creating these engines, we start playing in, again, top secret research laboratories or what have you, and imagine they just create like a Stargate that's really tiny on a table, you know, three feet in diameter or something, and they just start winding up a bunch of electromagnetic frequencies from all different directions, spooled around the Stargate, going in a straight line around the Stargate, or going in a circle, you know, around it. And they just keep looking and looking and looking. And eventually, through just sheer computer control on the frequencies and everything that could possibly happen, low frequency, high frequency, agitated frequency, sacred geometry frequencies, all of a sudden they look through and they see a whole other world. Maybe they see the one that they're in, but it's a few minutes later. And once you have that little clue, oh my God, if you were a scientist and you were trying to create product A, and you just have to be playing with electromagnetism because that's sort of the basis of the product you're trying to improve or create. But then you see like another dimension through this hole and you're like, oh shit, I don't think I'm making a TV 2.0 anymore. I think I'm making whatever this thing is. And then you start incubating it up. People find out you do it. And they put a lot of money behind you and kick you out of the project or suck you in for the rest of your life. The guy in Coral Castle had a magnetic wheel. I don't think he was dealing with anything interdimensional, but it created his power source. Why else would he have the thing? And he was always, the one thing always people say, he was always going in there and winding that thing up, and he'd have power for a little while, and he'd do it again. So, a little interesting. We want control over our lives at the most fundamental level that we discern as our participation in our choices. We do not want complete control over our autonomic health system. We don't want to have to think about every breath. But now that I just told you about thinking about breathing, for the next 60 seconds, you're going to think about breathing. We definitely don't want to control all the atoms in the universe, whatever they're made out of. We want the universe to be on autopilot, based on hopefully rules that we can learn such that we don't, you know, walk into a fire that wasn't there before, right? The interesting thing about the Higgs boson particle was the whole argument about a stable universe, singular universe, or multiverse. And so when they found the Higgs boson particle directly in between the two theorized frequencies, I mean, you knew you were being had, man. Give me a break. They just wanted to give that guy, because one of them's dead, one of them's alive, so I think it's Higgs that was alive. But they wanted to give him the prize, the Nobel Prize for this whole thing, and just basically create a success story for the CERN Hadron Collider, which was having all kinds of delays and problems. So they needed to have a press moment. So they just invent this particle and say it's there, and then just kind of hedge their bets, put it in between. I assure you, in your future, you will find out that that's all fake. Not that it really dictates much, but the multiverse theory for these gullible physicists who built this thing, there's a documentary with the two guys who helped perfect what frequency each one of the theorized particles would show up, or the Higgs boson would show up at, one again being very stable, one being very unstable. Because it was halfway towards the unstable one, the guy who had the stable theory wrote an article, was interviewed several times. He's like, I'm really concerned. Well, why are you concerned? Because the whole universe could come unraveled at any minute. It's much more fragile than we ever thought. Drama, drama, drama. Grant, Grant, Grant. Guy never has to get a real fucking job in his life, right? Unbelievable. Maybe we all picked the wrong jobs. It just reminds me of that scene in History of the World Part 1 where Mel Brooks walks up to, what is it, Maude Harris? Is that her name? And she's the unemployment office in Rome back in Caesar's day. And he has to go get his unemployment. And he's, of course, he's dressed like a, you know, average Roman citizen. She's the same on the other side. She's behind this window with like the little cutout. And she goes, next. And he's like, okay, what's your job? And he goes, stand-up philosopher. And she says, you see her sigh like, oh my God, like that's a real job. And she goes, okay, did you bullshit today? And Mel Brooks goes, no. And she goes, well, did you try to bullshit today? Yes. You know, it was just a brilliant summation of a lot of folks that hide in academics, you know. God bless them. Some of them like a Marshall McLuhan or Jean Beaujolard, they're real deal guys, man. They're supernatural human beings that thought on a level that we're going to have to wait another 100 years for a couple more of those guys. So the reason why I mentioned that stability, instability thing is that, I don't know about you, but my entire life, it's been very stable. You know, I haven't turned into a frog and then turned back into a human. I haven't had my car turn into a blow-up doll and then back into a car. So things are pretty stable. So I don't think we have anything to worry about with the operating system of the universe. And like I always say, I want you to remember that a program that is perfect is by definition a program that is true, right? So when we feel, and we are that program too, right? We're just as perfect as everything, whether or not we just, you know, pick like ethical things or moral things. It's all relative, man, right, to us. But we still are who we are. Hitler never spontaneously combusted to the demise and disappointment of several people, right? So my question is, at this deeper phase of the episode, are there elements of our inspiration, like I was saying, seeing echoes from a parallel universe that is the Black Apple? And if we are allowing the, I'll put it into real terms here, if we allow the ruling class of this world to destroy the world, and I don't mean Death Star destroy, I mean wars, 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 economic bust, 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 bad educations, cancer, divorce your spouse whenever there's a bad problem in life, don't work anything out, no one ever dies married anymore, that kind of world. And there's political paradigms on top of that, there's racial paradigms on top of that, there's sexual orientation paradigms on top of that. It's just getting worse and worse and worse. I think we had racism fairly well under control, and now it's sort of out of control again. Sort of. At least in the press, the fake news. So if we are inspired by echoes of parallel universes because of this interdimensionality of our actual existence, then it's imperative that we reset the planet. That purging these negative people is real important. But now, the question always comes up that's like, okay, like I just told you, if Tesla and everyone back before him in electronics knew about ether and they shut it off for us in the school, don't even teach us Tesla ever existed. I mean, how? He never killed anybody. He never necessarily backstabbed anybody. He just was this dude on his own creating all this wild stuff, but it was always a threat to those who wanted to charge money for everything and control us, right? He was trying to create the death ray to stop all wars. Well, then that guy is against the bankers. Don't even teach anybody he exists. Meanwhile, he was hitting home runs like Babe Ruth on a repeat loop, right? So what if they knew this? What if they knew? Well, here's what we're in. We live in the lap of luxury, you know. We get to rape kids and have Satanistic parties with Gwen Stefani, right? And Will Ferrell. They're choosing the best seconds because that's all they know. And whatever satanic second they want to choose, they still love it. It's whatever they want to choose. But we're sitting down here eating the scraps of their evil, fighting among each other, getting divided up by theories, paradigms. So I kind of want to always encourage you folks. And again, I'm speaking an idealistic goal of which even I, obviously, being human as you, struggle to achieve. But at least, you know, I'm struggling to achieve it. I'm struggling every day to go, wow, I used to really think really super negative thoughts about that. But now I'm kind of, all right, I'm seeing it from their perspective a lot more because I'm getting more mature with my age, right? Thank God that happens with age. Jesus, I was always told that one gets real cynical as one gets older. And that's a slippery slope that's easy to fall down. But I'm fighting it because I don't want to turn into that a crabby old bastard. No one's going to want to take care of a bastard, right? I just won't do it. Plus, I just have a mantra in life of trying to be cool and relaxed, you know? And, you know, they're not going to... practice makes perfect. And if you don't practice it, what's going to happen to you? What's the opposite of perfect? So I'd be interested in your knowledge about this, your opinions about this. Again, the more detailed you get, the better. And by the way, we've had some of the most amazing comments in this last 7 days. This is November 20th. So in the week before this, man, I've just had some cool comments about someone explained the phone issue I mentioned, where the phone kept falling on the ground. In my Being Psychic episode, had a great explanation of this other race of beings that I guess are well known among certain people, and they have these missions they go on. Now, whether or not that's true or not, doesn't even matter. It was so cool. Someone chimed in today and said that they have experimented with gravity using 5-ton ingots of lead with a 1 gram of palladium, and couldn't find any influence of the big ingot, 5-ton ingot, on this little tiny particle. And so this 1 gram thing, and he was well within the range that it should start influencing relative some pull towards the ingot because it weighs so damn much, right? My physics teacher in school told me once, which I cringed a little bit when he said it, but he goes, well, he's talking about gravity. And he said, well, you know, when you get passed by a big semi on our little 2-lane roads in Kansas, he goes, don't you feel the car go wham towards the, he goes, well, he goes, a bunch of that is wind. The majority of that force is wind, of course. But he goes, there's a fair amount that's gravity as well. Now, I don't know that gravity has that much of a pull. And I'm not talking about the phenomenon gravity that we know is all bullshit. We're talking about your theory of gravity, why we're held to this planet. So anyway, we're getting some really good things. But yeah, if you have seen videos, read books about this, definitely link them below. What I really want to know is if we were to be in, again, have the Deep Thoughts Radio College, and we have this division that's going to look for interdimensional existence. And again, we have to start from a completely shrouded past because they're not sharing any of their information. What experiments would you do to try and see this other dimension? Have you ever seen something that makes you believe there is one? And, you know, paranormal is definitely a whole realm, which is potentially another dimension. I don't know how, to be very frank with you, a spirit coming into your world and saying hello in whatever way they do it, mind's eye, apparition in the room, if they exist, I think there's a million ways to explain that. I mean, the very intentional ways that they can vibrate, you know, just ethereal winds. You can just vibrate the ethereal winds in your room and they're going to create a photonic wave, a verb, right? Which is a photon. And you start seeing this little apparition in the room. So that's pretty good. Now, the weird Michael Jackson one where the shadow walks by, my God, what a stretch, man. But the other one is, you know, like me seeing Walt Disney or my grandmother right after she passed. You know, those are in my mind's eye. They're not in the world that anyone can see. They're in me. So I don't know. How's that happening? It's not happening on my visual cortex. It's happening in some other dimension of my third eye perceiving reality. But the dude was, you know, both of them talked to me. Both of them told me something very important. I didn't know my grandmother was ill enough to die, and she said she had already died and went to the other side. And then 2 o'clock, I got the call, which is 2 hours after I woke up. And my mom's telling me how her mom passed. And I was like, oh, shit, she came to me today. And then Walt pointing me directly to Bob Gurr at the park. Okay, that's pretty, something else going on, folks. So how would you build that wing? Would we need, obviously, we could go the equipment route. You know, and there's other research programs I should probably mention too, which we all know about, which is if someone really showed super psychic capabilities of any kind, you would imagine, and we've heard about these programs where the intelligence agencies have funded multiple billions of dollars of research into remote viewing, which I have a whole episode on. And, you know, anyone who shows paranormal capabilities, they bring them in, they find them, they hear the rumor about them, and they send black suits down to go grab them. And, you know, they do treat them with the velvet glove treatment so that they're not traumatized. I'm going to try to do an episode on telekinesis. I don't know if I can pull it off for an entire hour. But, you know, I've seen videos of guys doing things. And, of course, the Skeptic Society guy busted a bunch of them. And it's almost, he's busted so many of them, you're like, oh, okay, some trick. We don't know how the trick works, but they're doing heavy breathing on objects. They just do all kinds of wild techniques. The guy, it was the famous one from the That's Incredible show back in the day. It was the white guy dressed like a ninja, some like martial arts looking guy. He had like Spock hair. I think he was a white guy. And his whole thing was he'd lay a phone book on the table, and he would think about it and think about it. And then he would kneel down and move his hand, and a whole page would flip over. And the Skeptics guy, so brilliant, he's an ex-magician. He goes, oh man, that's an old parlor trick. And he goes, watch. And he goes, what the guy is doing is he's lining himself up with the page perfectly with his nasal cavity. And as he brings himself down, he's bringing a wave of wind with his body, and then he's exhaling at an exact point where it gets underneath the page and flips it over. And he did it, and you're like, oh my god, wow, looked like magic a second ago, looked like supernatural, and then just some little parlor trick. But there's a lot of like carnival type shows where they'll, you know, back in the Dust Bowl era, and even in the 1800s, you know, the circus owners would hear about a rumor of some kid in the back in the Ozarks or something has got some capability, and they track him down and try to get him in the show. You know, whether it be a trick or not, they don't even care. So maybe there's some solicitation for folks, almost like an American Idol audition, where we're like, okay, if you think you got something you can recreate, just know you're going to be surrounded by scientists, know you're going to be surrounded by Skeptic Society people or former magicians and know every trick in the book. So if you're coming in pulling off some stunt, you better be really good. And otherwise, you know, we want to know if you really have this capability. And the other one is astral projection, which you sort of loosen your soul from your body and you astral project. And I have so many friends that will say, I studied astral projection and then immediately was able to do it. And I'm sitting there kind of going, really? You just read a book about seeing ghosts and all of a sudden you see them? That's pretty amazing, right? For me, well, then I was trying to tell another friend of mine, I said, look, in my dreams as of right now in my life are, they're alternate realities. I mean, they're not this reality. I mean, in terms of like feely, touchy, five senses. But boy, take away the senses that you don't get in a dream, but the linearness of my dreams are, it's like Picard in the episode in Star Trek where he gets sucked into a probe and must have lived like 50 years in this other world and then popped back in his body. He was only gone like 30 seconds, but he just lived 50 years and he had to really detox out of that whole thing. He had a whole different wife and kids and he was a grandfather and all this, their planet was exploded and it was this message in a bottle, basically is what it was. Brilliant. But when I go to bed, I dreamed the other day that I was standing in line at like a Walmart kind of store. It wasn't Walmart, but it was like a really cool store with all kinds of wild stuff. And I'm standing in line the whole time with friends, and I'm talking to them, and we're advancing slowly through the line. And it's like, you know, it was real time. I even got up, went to the restroom, came back, went right back into the dream. Now I'm in the parking lot. We're all chilling out. And, you know, the fashion was amazing. Like, everybody's clothing was really cool and the cars were really cool. And it was like, what am I doing? Like, am I sensing another dimension of life that I have actually lived at maybe this exact timetable, but the whole world went a different route and it's much better and euphoric because that's the world I love to dream about. So when I get out of this world and I put my head down on my pillow, I just immediately float into that world because that's where I want to be. And, you know, why do you take negative things from your dreams, or sorry, from your life into your dreams? You might have a frustration dream if you've had a problem you haven't solved in this particular world. Well, what if it's all just frequencies, man? You're just taking the square peg and putting it in a square hole. But if you made it a round peg before you went to bed, you'd have a round dream. You know what I'm saying? So I'm trying to sift through things that we just take for granted, because nothing is just happening for granted. This world doesn't exist for granted. I don't give a shit what you believe about how the world shaped, evolution versus creationism. Doesn't matter. This place exists, and it's pretty intentional. At least it is for us, from our perspective, right? You're intentionally listening to me right now. Everything about that, you know? And so I am glad that we can send this through a camera and share experiences. I will tell you this before I close off. If we ever did get to create our little university, the first thing I would do is have someone write a piece of software, if it doesn't already exist, and drag every single comment out of YouTube. And then the first team that creates the university is going to comb through all the comments and take anything that's been intelligently put together that has a, you know, a thread someplace else. You should read this book. I had this experience, and it's super detailed. And that's just what we'd forge the first objectives out of, would be all your comments. Because, boy, it's just a treasure trove, let me tell you. Just getting better every day. And I will say, for those of you, there's a couple of you out there that are going back and watching all the old episodes. I can see you marathoning through them. And there's one of you know who you are, and you're just posting tons and tons of comments. The comments are very heavy right now, and all that, you don't see them all, but I get, you know, every single one of them put in this feed. Man, it's like, it's everything I can do just to read them once, let alone reply to you guys. So if you're feeling like you're owed a response, the answer is yes, you are owed a response. I'm trying to get in there and do that. For those of you who just drop compliments here and there, you know, you know how it works. I'm reluctant to go, thank you, and all of them, but that's how I feel. So if I thumb your comment up, I haven't said this in a while, that's my thank you, number one. But I'll do like every third one or so. And especially if someone seems like they're brand new to the channel, man, I've never been here before, this is really cool, I usually drop that person, you know, a personal note just to say thank you so much for visiting, that sort of thing. So it's cool. But definitely dig in, man, because it's, you know, find the subjects that you dig. And that's where we get to deepthoughtsradio.com, because that is that's the cornerstone of the entire pyramid. It's the paramerdian sitting at the top of our awesome truth pyramid. Someone asked me today if I was a Freemason. I want to answer the question publicly. It's sort of a funny question. Absolutely not. But I did find out when I was my early 40s that my grandfather, and I actually should have known this because his grave has the Masonic, you know, thing on it. Because every old man in my hometown, we had a Masonic lodge down the street. And I have really no idea whatever went on in the lodge. There was never any bad rumors about the place. They would raise money for kids' hospitals and that kind of stuff. So it's probably the underling good guys down below. But he was in the Freemasons. And in fact, there's a pentagram, I think, on my grandmother's side, which is like, oh, geez. And she knew that was there. He died way before she died. So he died at 59, I think. She died at 83. But, Yeah, not a Freemason. Not going to join. My neighbor across the street joined the lodge, the Elks Lodge, and they've come over several times and said, man, we know you. We know the conversations you have. He goes, man, we have these kind of lame conversations. You should really join because you'd really spice up the conversation. I'm kind of like, man, if my listeners found out I joined any one of these places, I'd be killed. So I got my own brain. I'm going to stick with it. It does fascinate me what goes on in those places. But anyway, back to the website. There's a search field. That's the first cool thing you can do is type in whatever word you're interested in. There's probably more than one video about it. But there's a category list I don't mention every single time. But there's like moon episodes, you know. Again, the moon episodes are the most popular ones. But there's all my dream episodes. You want to learn how to write screenplays, get into that. I guarantee you my screenplay episodes have all the stuff you never hear from Hollywood. And it's not in any of the books. Or if you're going to get them from all the books that I own. Out of 30 books, I'm probably contributing at least a third more than all the books that I own, which is the reality of the job. There are two feeds for a video. One is YouTube, of course. The other one is BitChute. And I'm stopping for BitChute, so you guys understand. It is the competitor to YouTube with no First Amendment problems, okay? So please go over to BitChute and create an account. If you know, the link to the channel is right there for my site. If you're on YouTube, you don't need to watch anything on BitChute, but please make a subscription over there. If you could just subscribe to the channel before you leave, that'd be great, because I think it ups my rank or whatever and being shown on the front page or whatever. But it's growing. It's cool. There's plenty of links for the podcast. Just get over there with your favorite device. It'll link up just beautifully. There are three social media outlets. The first one that I always love to talk about is the locked Facebook group. It's locked because we have to keep out all the trolls and your employers and people you don't want to see your open mind, you know. But we have just the greatest group of people. I mean, it's certified every day, you know. And our membership is actually not going up that much. So I assume that everybody wants to get in is in. And I understand if you hate Farcebook. I understand. The other one's Twitter. Twitter is actually picking up traction, a lot of retweets from folks. So I super appreciate that as well. And then the competitor to Facebook, which is Minds.com. Just like Facebook, except for way prettier, a lot more features, and it's all blockchain as I understand it. So that's super cool. So I put all the episodes up there as well. The other category of links is the donation capabilities. Patreon has pretty much stated 10 sponsors that are $34. So to all 10 of you, you're in the credits. Thank you so much. But anyone who's ever contributed is in the credits. There's some people that somehow got on the Patreon list, but they never donated any money. So I don't know how that works. But if you get on Patreon, you get these episodes a little bit ahead of everybody else. At least 80% of the time, usually. The other one is PayPal Direct. And again, we've had a few contributors. Thank you so much. And the other two products I want you to have, one to cut off the deep state, which is get off Chrome, get off Facebook, Firefox, get onto Brave browser, change your search engine to DuckDuckGo. It's getting so popular, it's getting a little slow, which I'm willing to wait, but no one tracks your stuff, and Brave knocks out all the deep state. It's beautiful. If you want to believe you got VPN protection, go ahead and do that. There was an article released, the Q linked to today, on the BBC website, which is proving what I keep telling all my closest friends, that pretty good protection, PGP protection, is bullshit, okay? You are not safe sending any information over the internet, period. I don't give a shit what your hacker friend told you. If you transmit a packet in the United States of America and the NSA cannot crack that packet within seconds, you're going to have black coats at your house, and they are going to fuck you up. So just have fun with that, because it's a felony that it's a law you aren't even aware of. But that law has been in effect as of the mid-90s, okay? But I got friends who kind of laugh at that, and I'm like, okay, dude, travel at your own risk. If they're not getting you and you think you're committing a crime, well, they know you're committing the crime. They just haven't got down to your level yet. So brace yourself. The other one is Backblaze Backup Software. I saw this as an affiliate off of either SGT or maybe In Pursuit of Truth or something like that. Probably SGT. Great software. $7 a month, infinite backup for two computers. Get it. It's awesome. beef up your connection at your house. Upload's more important than your download for that particular product. Of course, I have a 300 megabit up and down from Frontier, and it's awesome. And last but not least, there is an all-new remastered Season 1. So if you're looking for Season 1 episodes on this channel, you're going to see it start at 101. The reason for that is I use a bunch of proprietary music. They struck them out for all kinds of stupid reasons, so I remastered them all, made them better, balanced the audio, fixed a bunch of pauses and ums and throat clearing and all that other crap, so some of the episodes are damn near 10 minutes faster than they used to be. Those are all linked also on the website, so if you want to just find the episodes that are all open and ready to go, just go to the website and download it. It's cool. Anyway, until the next episode, take care of yourself and someone else in this dimension that we're in, and I'll see you in the next Deep Thoughts. Over now.